In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the exclusive sponsor of Grant and Danny, the law firm Kondorian Murad can guide you and your family in the right direction. If you need some help setting up a revocable trust, perhaps creating a healthcare power of attorney, maybe you need to draft your will, like my parents did. I sent them to Kondorian Murad. They will schedule a free consultation with you. They're estate planning attorneys at kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. Get a discount. kmlawyers.com. Right now, caller 10 at 800-636-1067. Congrats, you're winning two tickets to see Creed and the Summer 99 Tour Friday. That's this week, July 26th, Jiffy Lube Live. Special guest, Three Doors Down, Finger 11. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com/events, courtesy of Live Nation. Coming up at 4:25, I got a message from a listener, and I thought their point was so interesting. I said, we've got to talk about this on the show. Their contention is the RFK site as a home for the Commanders is an overrated, over-talked about, basically like more bark than bite situation. I just want to pitch that and tell you what they said and get reactions to it. We'll do that coming up in a little over 20 minutes. But it is time for our Beltway Blitz. We're going to be covering the Wizards with Glenn Consor, the Commanders with our buddy Earl Forsey. Let's start on the diamond right now. Bobby Blanco, MassinSports.com. Bobby, DJ Herz recalled, will start for the Nats tonight. What do we need to know?
Yeah, DJ gets back in the major leagues after, you know, his first half was kind of cut short. I think the Nationals sent him down earlier than I think people expected just because they wanted to give him a little bit of a break. I think it's been like 16 days since he last pitched in the majors. And, you know, he's going to go out tonight, get his first start of the second half. And, you know, Davey just talked about it, wanting to throw strikes. I mean, we've seen him throw strikes really effectively. Those two really strong outings, including that one where he struck out 13 batters. You know, when he attacks the strike zone, he's a very effective pitcher, but he's still so young and so raw, you know, not having pitched above Double-A before this year. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is an opportunity for DJ to kind of get a couple more major league starts underneath his belt, show the Nationals what he's got, but also work on some things. I mean, he's kind of a more long-term project than guys like Jake Irvin, Mitchell Parker, because he's still so young and so raw, but he's going to get another opportunity to do that tonight.
You mentioned Jake Irvin, Bobby. Last couple starts before the break, a lot of crooked numbers and bad columns. He was really good the other day against Cincinnati. What was the difference?
Yeah, I think, you know, the time off, I think, did him well, too. I think, you know, he was very upset with the way that his first half ended after being so strong throughout the first couple of months. But he just got back to pounding the strike zone. I mean, he made a couple of mistakes, obviously the home runs, but you know, after all that, he only gave up two runs and struck out seven over those seven innings. So I think getting back within the zone is something that obviously all these Nationals pitchers need to do. But especially with Jake, I mean, when he's being aggressive against both righty and lefty hitters, you know, he's super effective up there. And he's been the Nats' most effective and consistent pitcher this season. So another guy that I think that clearly benefited from some time off, rejuvenated his arm, isn't ready to go for the second half, and that's a good way to get off to the second half on Sunday.
The Padres are in town. It's hard as a Nats fan to hear Padres and not think about the Soto deal. Tonight, C.J. Abrams will be at short. For the first time, James Wood, since being called up, will play against the team that once traded him as well. Mackenzie Gore's not going to pitch in this series, but three of the best players on the big league club currently and two of the best prospects in the minor leagues all came over in that Soto deal. What do you make of the first game for Wood against his old organization and also just looking back at that trade?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why we're all kind of here tonight at Nats Park, looking forward to see how James does, especially after Sunday, right, after his heroics, the 3-run home run in the eighth. I mean, he's proven himself that he can be a force up here in the National with the Nationals at the major league level. You know, he was one of the top, if not the top prospect in that trade. Now taking the field with CJ against the Padres. Of course, James wasn't in San Diego when the Nats played them a month ago, so this is his first time facing his former team. And, yeah, I mean, we're also getting to trade deadline time of year, right? So it's kind of hard not for fans to not look back 2 years ago at that Juan Soto deal that, you know, completely uplifted this franchise and changed it, you know, for the near future and probably the long-term future, hopefully, in terms of, you know, McKenzie, CJ, James, and then Robert and Susana being up here eventually. So, yeah, I mean, I wonder if it's going to be an emotional night for James. We've seen him handle all that kind of stuff very well, his debut, his first road trip, all that kind of stuff. He has had no problem with the spotlight, but I think the spotlight's definitely going to be on him tonight as he faces the Padres for the first time. He doesn't seem like a, you know, I'm going to kind of a payback kind of guy, but you got to imagine that he's thinking about it. That first at bat he's going to take tonight against the Padres starter, who was actually also included in a Juan Soto trade, which is kind of interesting. So yeah, big night here at Nationals Park for Wood and CJ.
Bobby, for Mackenzie Gore, who you just mentioned, only 10 innings combined over his previous three starts. A weird one the other day, only threw two innings, and the pitch count was a trillion point seven. You know, numbers approximate there. What's going on with him? Looks like he's in a bit of a funk.
Yeah, and this funk has gone back until, like, June, unfortunately. You know, his last start before the All-Star break was in New York against the Mets, and he talked at that time being like, you know, how he's really looking forward to the break, kind of resetting, resting up, and kind of trying to figure out what's been going on with him the past month. That obviously didn't carry over very well into his first start of the second half on Saturday. The pitch count has been kind of an issue all year. It obviously hasn't been an issue like it was on Saturday, lasting only an inning or two. But, you know, every time we talk about how great he is, you know, we always do say there is just that one inning where he's throwing too many pitches and it kind of derails his outing. So if he can figure out how to be more effective with his pitches, that's what I'm looking for from McKenzie the rest of this season. Can he figure out what was going on? I think Saturday was more of an odd thing than anything else, an outlier, if you will. So hopefully he can get back to what he's been doing in the second half, but also figure out how to be more efficient with his pitches. Doesn't need strikeouts. He needs quick innings, get deeper into the game and be more effective. I think that's what the Nationals are looking for from him for the rest of the year.
Bobby Blanco, MassinSports.com on our Beltway Blitz. You mentioned the trade deadline. Who do you think ends up getting dealt?
Yeah, I think Jesse Winker, Dylan Floro, and even Derek Law are easy guys to flip because they're on expiring contracts. They've got a good enough track record, especially Floro and Winker, that a team could probably use them. Derek Law has some underlying metrics that are worked for his favor, but obviously we know how he hasn't been very good with runners, inherited runners this year out of the bullpen. But then the big question marks are still Lane Thomas and Kyle Fendick. And I think Mike Rizzo showed that he's not afraid to trade guys who have another year of control when he traded Hunter Harvey before the draft. Kyle and Lane both fall under that category as well. You know, I'd be interested to see if, because, you know, we're expecting him to also trade Floro and maybe Law, does he hold on to Kyle Finnegan because they need somebody to close out games in the second half, especially if they're going to try to stay competitive and win more ball games than they have the past couple of years. But Lane is the one. I mean, we know the depth of the outfielders in the minor league system. We know Dylan Cruz is knocking on the door. You know, is he a little bit more willing to give up Lane Thomas because of that depth and because he has the extra year of control, can ask for a big return? I'll be interested to see if he's able to do that. And keep in mind, don't forget, we always talk about he traded an aging John Lester for Lane Thomas in the beginning. So anything he can get back from at this point is gold.
Bobby, thank you as always, dude. Talk soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, bro. Hit that Wizard sounder, please. Our guy Glenn Consor joins to talk about those Wizards. Glenn, big picture Summer League. Some thoughts. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought, you know, we saw some really good stuff from a lot of the younger players. And obviously, Taylor had a great last game where he had 29 points and played very, very well. So, you know, we saw some nice things for some good young players.
I was blown away by how NBA ready, and I know it was a summer league, but just aggressive and confident Bob Carrington was as one of the youngest players in the draft class. What do you think made his success possible, and were you surprised at all with how he looked?
No, because they drafted him for those reasons. I mean, he's – first of all, yesterday was his birthday, I think, and he just turned 19. So, you know, he was playing those games. He was still 18 years old, so very young. He's got a great feel. If you watch him play at Pitt, he's got a nice feel for the game. He gets to his spots. He doesn't force things. And he's got a mid-range pull-up game that is under control for such a young player. He's got a nice feel, you know, so I really like him. And I like what I saw from Saw defensively. Offensively, he's going to be fine. Let me just tell you this, you know, with Summer League, you can't tell anything from Summer League, zero. You could tell how these guys move, you know, and certain things, but the NBA game is completely different than Summer League. In fact, you look at the history of the Summer League MVPs, most of those guys aren't even in the league.
It's a great point, and that kind of gets us to our next question on Sarr and his offensive struggles. I mean, was there anything to take out of that at all?
No, I really don't think so. He's going to be fine. You know, when he gets with the system, you know, don't forget he's playing the first time, you know, here. There was a lot of guys that came from Europe that came into the Summer League that did not look good offensively because there's no system, you know, and there's not a lot of reps that you can get with your teammates. He's going to need to be set up. He's going to have to learn the NBA game, just like Bub is. There's no difference. I mean, he's going to be fine offensively, you watch. He's going to be fine defensively. Man, he's going to be something special.
So, Glenn, just talking about Sarr offensively, in a summer league environment, I would go, dude, every time you're comfortable, take a shot. Even if you're not comfortable, take a shot. Let's see what happens. Because there's no stakes to it, right? It's like getting him comfortable on the floor. How different do you think his role is going to be once the NBA season starts? Obviously, they're not going to be calling a ton of plays for him and running ISO looks for him, et cetera. But I think he'll get his by running and hustling. But what do you think his role is going to be early on and then kind of as he grows to fit him in well and what's best for his development?
I think the Wizards as an organization and him as a player have to learn what that is. That's a great question, Danny, because, you know, this is the growth of these young players. I mean, they're going to have to figure it out. The Wizards are going to have to figure it out where he can play. The good thing about him is he could play facing the basket. He's going to learn how to play with his back to the basket. I like the way he passes. He has a high basketball IQ. He's got a good feel for the game. I like how he moves. He runs the floor very well. So he's going to get his. He's going to have plenty of opportunities. And then he's going to also get used to playing with guys that could set him up. And that's going to be another big deal. You play with a good point guard that could set you up, man. A guy like that, that could run the floor and move like he does, he's going to look like a different player.
Our guy, Glenn Consor, on our Beltway Blitz. Won't be long before we see and hear you on game night. Wizards back in action in the fall. Thank you, Glenn. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys.
See you, buddy.
Be well, bud. Let's talk some football. And to do that, our guy, Earl Forsey, is keeping you up to speed every half hour here on 106.7 The Fan. Earl, practice number one tomorrow. Peters, yeah. Quinn at the mic today. I've heard you playing some of the clips. What stood out to you?
What stood out to me, Grant, was that it was the beginning of training camp, and we had a coach and a GM in Washington talking to the media about nothing but football. I tweeted it out. It's like, I can't. It's still tough getting used to the normalcy that is that team. So, to me, that was the big standout. They're not saying anything. There's no quarterback being named as a starter yet, although, you know, if number two pick overall doesn't start from day one, that's an issue in and of itself. He's going to. But I think that's the main standout is that, okay, football season. It's here. Talk to the coach. He'll talk again tomorrow, you know, before the first practice. And we're kind of underway with a normal off season and a lot of excitement and you know, a new coaching staff and regime that's obviously excited about what they've done this off season as well.
Should they name him the starter?
I don't see why not. I you know, I heard you guys talking about it. He doesn't want to. They don't want to anoint him. I understand all that. But again, if Marcus Mariota has any real 0.001% chance of being the starter, then they made the wrong pick. I mean, there should be no chance that that guy has any chance of winning the job against the guy you put the trust of your franchise in. It's probably all just semantics, and, you know, didn't Dan Quinn said one of the things, you know, today that he said. It's, you know, basically like we kind of all know the answer, but I'm not saying it, I think was, to me, what I took away from some of his comments, that it's kind of obvious where we're headed here. So I don't think it's a big deal, but to me, I don't think it's a big deal if they would just say Jaden Daniels is their quarterback. Why not? He's going to be. And I think Grant was the one that pointed out it may happen quickly. They have the joint practice with the Jets, the first preseason game. I think J.P. Finley said today with B-Mitch that he expects Daniels to play in that first preseason game and maybe not again after that. So we'll probably know pretty soon, within the first couple of weeks officially. But, you know, it's the game they're playing, but everybody knows what the answer is going to be, you know, when week one kicks off.
Earl, how confident are you in Cliff Kingsbury as an OC?
Don't know. And that's a big question because, look, he did some good things with Kyler Murray. And there were some limitations with, Kyler Murray as well physically with his size and everything. And possibly still some limitations with Jaden Daniels. Is he, you know, physical enough, big enough to withstand the punishment in the NFL with, you know, still a kind of a question mark at best offensive line in front of him. So I think that's a positive because they did some really good things when he was healthy, Grant, with that offense, with, you know, maybe not as good a team around him as he has now. I'm not sure how good a team we're looking at, you know, with Washington. I'm not sure anybody really is. But I would expect that this is going to be, you know, the numbers from last year are mind-boggling, how much they threw under Eric Bieniemy. I mean, it was ridiculous, the final numbers, what a skew it was to pass versus run. And you know, everybody knew it was coming, and they didn't have a chance. I think it's going to be a more diverse offense. I think there's going to be more balance. It doesn't have to be 50-50 like the Rooster wants. And Jaden Daniels is a part of that because he can run the football. So I think diversity is what we're going to see. And, you know, again, I like the fact that Cliff Kingsbury has something to prove himself in the NFL. He's coaching maybe for the next year or two to try to become a head coach again. So good. He's got something to prove himself. Let's see it.
Earl, I asked you this before. Maybe it's been a month. I can't remember exactly when. Is their starting left tackle, the guy that plays the most games at left tackle?
No.
One of their incumbents?
Is he on the roster?
Is he a kid? Is it someone that's not on the roster yet?
He's playing college football somewhere this year. Maybe, what do they got, two kids at LSU? They're going to be high picks. No, I don't think so, Danny. I don't think you fix your offense. And again, it's just me. And I know it's an overgeneralization possibly. But there's two ways you fix that. You either acquire someone like Laremy Tunsil in Houston that the Dolphins gave up on. He made a sweet deal, and he's the anchor of that team. And look what happened with that quarterback with him at left tackle and a good offensive line, or you fix it with a very high first-round pick. Now, they're probably going to have a high enough first-round pick next year that they can fix it, depending on how things work out. But and it's not a knock against the guy they drafted, not a knock against any of the incumbents, but you've got to have that guy that you plug in from day one as your starting left tackle for 10 years. I don't think that guy isn't there. So that problem isn't fixed. Possibly you can address it in free agency. We'll see how, you know, the season works out, what they want to do next year, and how much money they're going to have to spend. But no, that player is not on the roster, which, while they have made some improvements and possible upgrades on the offensive line, I mean, that in the end, that is the big question mark, because if that position's not right, I don't care who your quarterback is, you can get him killed in the NFL. And Jaden Daniels is not a guy. Look, a rookie, you don't want him to have to worry about that. I think they're probably planning on his mobility to be a factor and to help that out. He'll get the ball out quickly. He did at LSU. But no, that position is nowhere near being fixed or addressed, I don't think.
Earl, we appreciate you as always, buddy.
Can't wait. The countdown to kickoff is underway, guys.
It's the
first
countdown too. The countdown too.
It is on.
We're 2.5 weeks away from the first game.
We're here.
The Jets, August 10th. I mean, so we're 6 weeks away from week one.
Oh, is it the Hall of Fame game this coming Thursday? Like a week from Thursday?
Yeah.
I mean, so football time, baby.
It's here. It's here, and I can't wait. And, you know, let there be football. Congratulations. Happy football, everyone.
No doubt. I'll be listening to Earl all season long, hopefully, driving to the stadium. Grant and Danny on the Fan. RFK Stadium is not the future home you're all dreaming about and you want, that you think it is, says one person whose take I want to try to put forth. See if anybody agrees. Next, here on The Fan.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You just reminded me of something. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. So you walked into the studio. I heard you say Eddie Yost.
Yeah.
Which was the name of a player that Phil Wood used to say at the end of all of his life.
We were just talking about DC Hall of Fame and the guys that were there. And, you know, it was spotted. Charlie Casserly was there. Ryan was talking about, oh, I saw Phil Wood.
Phil Wood was back. But he ended all of his baseball shows, or maybe every show he ever did. I really don't know. He would say Eddie Yost.
Eddie Yost.
Which was like adios, but with the player's name. So completely unrelated to that, but exactly the same. You know how my wife always calls Ildemaro Vargas till tomorrow?
Yes.
She's been wanting me and keeps asking me, did you do it? Did you do it? At the end of our show to say till tomorrow Vargas. And it's a great idea, but I never remember ever. So I'll try to do it today.
Oh, so but like...
That could be my Eddie Yost.
Like, I was going to say, establishing your sign-off bit. So like in 15 years, God willing, we're still flapping our gums.
Yeah.
And it's like this obscure player who was here for 2 years until the minor league kids were ready.
You've been holding out on us for that bit, because I would have definitely been on you to have do that bit every day.
I never remember. I think about it like maybe like occasionally during the show once, but basically like every 2 days she's like, "Have you done it? Have you done it?" Because we always refer to him if he's at the plate or whatever. I'm like, "Oh, till tomorrow's up," and she just says, "Till tomorrow, Vargas." So she's like, "You should sign off that way. Say till tomorrow, Vargas." I didn't put the two and two together that it's a Phil Wood bit, kind of like Eddie Yost.
Yeah.
Until you just walk back in and that connected.
That could be your
all
bit.
The dots. But yeah, it could be a sign off. Till tomorrow, Vargas.
Till tomorrow, Vargas. Try it out today. See how it feels.
What's funny
if it feels forced, then maybe you want to.
Like you said, if in 15 years you look back and you're like, this guy played like 76 games and at 253, like what? I think that makes it a little bit better.
That's the point, right?
I don't know that Eddie Yost was a Hall of Famer.
I don't think he was, yeah.
Probably not. Right?
Only in the Yost family.
I got a tweet from somebody, and I'm not even going to, I won't even throw the name out there as much as to say this is a guy named Joe.
Okay.
That's what his name is.
All right.
His name is Joe. I'm going to read you his exact tweet, and I want to set up a conversation here. He says, "I'm going to get killed for this, but why are we so enamored with the RFK site? Traffic will be a disaster. There's not enough space to tailgate. It's a bad area. Metro is close, in quotes, is a fine argument if people were going to weeknight games after work. It's not 1985. Let's move on." Now, at its core, when I hear that argument, just RFK is overrated, it's not that much better than the others, I would dismiss it outright, yell this guy out of the bar, so to speak. Get out of here. You're crazy. But then you hear his points. There's some decent ones in here, I think. I'm going to go back through them one at a time.
Okay.
We can agree and disagree with things. He says, "I'll be killed. Why are we so enamored with RFK? Traffic will be a disaster." Now, traffic's going to stink pretty much anywhere. It would be the worst it could possibly be is if they put it at that like Woodbridge-ish location in 95 that came up at one point.
Yeah, like Dumfries kind of or whatever it was. Yeah.
That one would be worse. But it's not like it's going to be a cupcake over there on that 295 corridor over by RFK Stadium.
No, there are no good traffic spots.
And I would say that would be every bit as bad a traffic spot as the current stadium, if not worse, over by FedEx Field, in my opinion.
If nothing's done thoughtfully to build around that and make traffic patterns infinitely better than they are right now, then yeah, it'll be just as much, if not worse, of a snarl.
It'll be awful.
It'd be bad.
Not enough space to tailgate. That is irrefutable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's plenty of space to build and do some of the stuff they want to do, I think. But there will never in any plan be a ton of parking lot there. Because if there's enough space to do their little town center where you can go to the bars and the restaurants, and even that, you know, people with the team over the years have told me there's plenty of space, no problem. The footprint is big enough. We could use this area over here, that area over here. You can walk from the restaurants and the bars we're building or the hotel to the stadium. Maybe. But what you can't convince me of, there's enough room to do both of those things and a big parking lot. And the priority is not a parking lot. The priority is the other stuff. So football, which is a tailgating sport,
mm-hmm.
football, which has a tailgating culture, you are giving up on that tailgate. And a lot of fans, the highlight of the experience is the tailgating. Now, ideally, when they move there and they're playing and they're good, that would not be the highlight anymore. The actual game, like that little fun thing,
that could be neat. Yeah.
Would be the A-lister of the day again, the actual 60 minutes of football. But for right now, your experience, if you're a season ticket holder, a regular attendee, I think when you think about going to a game, every bit as much as sitting there and cheering for the first down that they might get, it's the pregame party with the bags and the tailgating and throwing a football and your kids running around with their buddies. Like, that's a big part of it. And that will very, very minimally be part of an RFK experience.
Yeah, so it's not a zero in terms of tailgating, but it's a lot less. You're just not going to have that kind of space. It'll be more to premium. So I'm making up a number. Instead of, say, 30,000 parking spots, there'll be 12. And for a lot of those folks, you won't be able to tailgate the same way. I think that's absolutely a thing.
And that ratio actually might be good, too.
I mean, I made that up out of my tuchus. I have no idea.
But, yeah, I mean, I think it would be like a quarter of the parking mm-hmm. lot space, if that, maybe. But, okay, so he says not enough space to tailgate. To me, that one's the easiest one to confirm, essentially. Then he says bad area. Now, I don't really know what he means by that other than maybe he's saying it's like not a good area in terms of crime or not a good area to be walking around, or, you know, just driving in. I don't really know where he's going with bad area, but he might just mean congested, not conducive to a lot of things around there, which that's part of the plan and the build. But if his point is bad area, no restaurants, no bars, there's not a walkable hotel, that's all true in the moment. You're buying mm-hmm. what was sold here at Nats Park, which happened. It took some time. You're buying what Maryland would have to, if they do FedEx 2.0, that all that stuff would come and make the area around there not bad
and
for
also,
a football stadium.
Maybe I would say your file for what that neighborhood is like, if he's talking about the other stuff, is probably not updated for a while. That neighborhood's gone through a ton of changing in terms of housing and some stuff that's in fairly close proximity to RFK. It's different than it was in the 80s when we were going to games.
Yeah, I think you can find whatever you want to find over mm-hmm. in that area, right? Like, good stats, bad stats, whatever.
Sure.
But, like, that's what I think having stadiums in cities is sometimes. And to me, that's not even the argument that, like, you're going in there on a Sunday for a football game. Your experience is going to be that of thousands of people around you going and watching football. But I don't know what he meant by that, so I don't want to guess necessarily. I'm assuming by bad area, though, he means not conducive to enjoying, like, pregame football type stuff. That's my guess.
Gotcha.
Metro is close is a fine argument if people were going to weeknight games after work. I actually love this point. Now, I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth. I'm going to get the pro being in the city part out first. Even for football on the weekends, the Audi Field experience with the Defenders, which is not a Wizards, Capitals, Nationals, weekday, you know, everyday kind of endeavor. It is awesome to be in the city. It's awesome to be downtown. I really enjoy going to Walters, meeting up with a couple people, and then walking over to Audi Field. I think that is great. Is it great because it's in D.C., or is it great just because I'm at a bar and then I'm walking to a stadium? I think it's probably more B than A, because there's nothing overly D.C. about the Navy Yard, if that makes sense. Like, driving in, I might see the monument over 14th Street Bridge or whatever, but it's not like I'm seeing the Capitol as I'm sitting at Walters. If I was sitting at, I'm just going to make something up, but like a Bar Louie that was built uh-huh. outside of, or a, let's call it a, you know, Adam Peters pub, you know, outside of the new stadium or right. something. Like, I don't think if that's in Maryland or Virginia, that's worse than being in D.C. Whereas at I would say that's not the same when you're at the Capital One Arena, which is like legit downtown right there. You know, you can walk several blocks to the monument, all that stuff, to the mall, so to speak. But it is awesome to be in the city, and I will always agree to that. My buddies, when we talked about the potential of the Caps and the Wiz being in Virginia for several months, they were annoyed because they go, I want to go downtown to go see my D.C. teams, which I get. But the Metro is close argument, his point is true about this as far as football compared to, you can't have a Nats ballpark without Metro, in my opinion. It's an everyday thing. There are games 81 times. People are coming from work in and around the city. It's just a necessity. There are games every day for 6, 7, 8, 9 days in a row. Caps and Wizards, weeknight games constantly, right? This is a work thing. This is a traffic thing. 95% of the games that will ever be played at an NFL stadium in the city are going to take place on Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is game day traffic. I'm not saying that there is not. But in the same way that the tailgate culture for football is way bigger and better and more expansive than it is, you're not tailgating ever before a Wiz and a Caps game. You don't need a parking lot. You're never really tailgating before a Nats game, very rarely. You don't really need a parking lot. You metro over, you either go get a drink somewhere, or you don't, you go into the game. Football is not that. Football, there is a tailgating element to it. Think about it, every college, every, you know, very few in cities, right, for a reason, because you need that parking lot and that space. But on top of that, the metro is close argument that he keeps coming back to means more on weeknights. I totally agree with that. Like, I don't, when you go to an NFL game, Danny, you leave at 9 in the morning or so. You come back at 5 in the evening or so. It's like an all-day endeavor where you're going, you're coming back, you're driving, you're setting up tables. A Nats game is, shoot, I'm getting out of the office in 5 minutes. Game starts in 37 minutes. I got to hop on the green line. It's so different.
So I would say a lot of people do, but I think you're discounting a lot of people that don't. Like, in other words, a lot of people, as it is now, take the metro and walk that mile or get there at noon for the 1 o'clock kickoff, you know, and don't do the all day thing. So it's a huge part of it. A lot of folks do, but a lot of folks don't as well.
I'm saying the majority do the all day thing. Like, I don't think that's really debatable. The majority of people, season ticket holders especially, like mm-hmm. the base, so to speak, those people are driving and parking and making an event of it. There are certainly people that metro. I'm not suggesting that there isn't, and they'll still be able to, I think, no matter where they build this thing, probably. If it's in Maryland, it's going to be closer to the metro. But my point is, like, and I think you'd have to agree with this, football, as opposed to those other sports, less...
It's a weekly appointment.
Metro on a weekend morning, more drive and spend the day, and tailgate is 50 times what the other sports are.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely part of it. But I would say I think there is a maybe larger percentage than you're acknowledging of folks that don't do the I got there at 8 o'clock in the morning with tailgate Ted and set up a theme barbecue for the week based on the team that we're playing. I think there's a huge percentage that get there right before kickoff, walk in.
What percent do you think drive and park and eat something
and
outside the
stadium? Eat something? Oh, it's a huge percentage. Yeah. But you're talking about the all-day tailgating element.
You're stuck on the all-day part. The hardcore gets there at 9 and stays till 5. Let's say they don't. There are still... If you get there at noon and eat and drink in the parking lot and walk in and leave right after the game, it's the same thing. I'm just saying I would guess 80-some percent of the fans at every game drive and park and do some sort of a tailgate or drink outside before they go in.
Yeah, because where the location is. I think now, or let's say you did the RFK spot, I think a lot of those fans that go, I did it that way, but you know what I can just do is take a metro and go grab a sandwich at Bar Louie. You know, right before kickoff, well, and that's just as good. And that's what they're going to have to
assuming
do,
assuming they're going to build those things, and that actually happens.
Right.
Because if you don't have those options, and you don't have the parking lots, mm-hmm.
then it's a non-starter.
This
screwed.
Is not that fun.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the tweet, that's the argument that this guy suggested to me. I want to get Danny's thoughts in more detail, and then let's hit the phones on this. I want to get reactions to this. Is there anything to be said for the RFK site and the nostalgia that comes with it? It's a lot of just trying to recapture the past, and it's actually not as good a location or not as important a location or not as superior to a Maryland or a Virginia location as people think. Or would you just categorically disagree with that and say, you got to be in the city, it's a D.C. team? 800-636-1067 is the number. 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Alongside Danny Rhea, I'm Grant Paulson. Welcome back. You're listening to The Fan. You missed out on a chance today to win tickets to Creed, but fear not, you can win a pair of tickets to see Creed at Jiffy Lube Live tomorrow at 4 o'clock. We'll give away tickets all week long right at 4 ahead of the Beltway Blitz. Right now, we are discussing a tweet that I got. And our coverage on all things Commanders today is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. So a dude named Joe hits me up on Twitter and says, I'm going to get killed for this, but why are we so enamored with the RFK site? Traffic will be a disaster. Not enough space to tailgate. Bad area. Metro is close is a fine argument if people were going to weeknight games after work. It's not 1985. Let's move on. That's pretty extreme, but I actually think there's a lot of merit to some of what he's saying. I agree with the Metro point, notably. The vast majority of people going to NFL games are going to be going on Sundays, driving in between 9 and noon. That's not really the time that you have to have the Metro for. Now, if you're going to be drinking, obviously you got to do a rideshare Uber situation where Metro is cheaper. I totally get that. But most people plan accordingly, either have a DD or sit in the parking lot, watch games, listen to the radio long enough, and then you're able to go home or what have you. But football is tailgating.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball, you need to have the Metro. I'm coming in right at game time or in the middle of the first inning. Basketball, hockey, in the city. It makes sense. You got to be at a Metro stop. You're not tailgating. You're not sitting in the parking lot. In those sports, at those venues, 80% of people, and I'm making that number up, but I would imagine it's something like that, are not making a day of it and coming for hours on end and playing cornhole and bags and setting up tables and bringing their chips and their dip and having a fiesta with all their buddies. So I think there is some merit to this when you talk about losing parking lot space, losing tailgating. Metro is actually not nearly as used as it would be for other sports. Do I prefer RFK? I do. But this idea that it's this disaster if they don't end up back in the city or at RFK, I've always kind of thought was a little bit overblown. And maybe it's just my age, my youth. Because I'd went there once, and it was a decade after they'd last won a Super Bowl, or close to it, 6-7 years, right at the end of RFK, after their last title, Danny. But my point is, the gap between a Taj Mahal in Maryland or Virginia having a stadium.
Hey guys, I'm from Virginia. We've got a stadium.
We don't do stadiums. We do memes. Virginia.
Want to go to the Virginia Stadium later?
Virginia.
Oh, I'm crying a little
God,
bit.
God, Danny. You
I started crying.
You are funny. Having a stadium in Maryland or Virginia, I don't think the gap's nearly as big.
So he's partially right, partial credit. We do overrate the RFK site. We do overrate it. And here's the reason why we overrate it. Not because of what he said. We overrate it because we think, I think a lot of folks have, all the joy was there. We just assume that once the stadium's erected there, it'll be like it was. It won't be. Nothing will be the same. It's going to look totally different. A stadium that whose bleachers bounce is not up to code. We're not doing that anymore. That doesn't exist. That dream doesn't exist. Now, here's where everybody's wrong. It's by so far and away the best location that nothing else matters. There are sacrifices and trade-offs that are going to be made. Some of the people that tailgate and love it so much, you may not be able to tailgate in the same way. That is the trade-off, certainly. I think there are going to be some sacrifices. The convenience, the central location, the idea that Virginia fans, there still are, they exist, by the way, it's part of the DMV, everyone settled down, have had to take it up the you-know-where for so many years and drive all over creation and go to Maryland.
What makes it the best location?
Central, the most centrally located, the fact that all three municipalities have a little bit of work to do to get there, the idea that it's close to things and that it's close to Metro. Everyone's poo-pooing the Metro part of it. I think that's essential. I think the new modern era fan will need to be able to get on the Metro, hop over, get their pregame sandwich from Panera, whatever the hell's on campus, and walk in.
Well, the one thing you're sleeping on is when they build this new stadium in Maryland, potentially, I believe it'll be just as close to Metro as the RFK site will. I mean, possibly. They could be within a half mile. I don't know, you know, by GPS, you know, Google Maps, how far when I get off the Metro is from the front door of the stadium, but it'll definitely be closer to Metro than the current one is. And they get to decide where they put this thing. They could extend Metro if they needed to. There's things that they could do. But I want to get the calls on this next, because actually this is one of those things where the pulse of the people matters a lot, and we need to touch our listeners. 800-636-1067 is the number. We're going to hit the phones hard on this next. This question, it's really a comment from a listener, is that the idea behind RFK, the nostalgia therein, that it's just like this overrated pipe dream, and it really isn't as big a deal that the Commanders end up there than people think. You buying that or selling that? We're Grant and Danny. Alongside Danny Ruiz, I'm Grant Paulson. Welcome back. You're listening to The Fan. You missed out on a chance today to win tickets to Creed, but fear not. You can win a pair of tickets to see Creed at Jiffy Lube Live tomorrow at 4 o'clock. We'll give away tickets all week long right at 4 ahead of the Beltway Blitz. Right now, we are discussing a tweet that I got, and our coverage on all things Commanders today is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. So a dude named Joe hits me up on Twitter and says, I'm going to get killed for this, but why are we so enamored with the RFK site? Traffic will be a disaster. Not enough space to tailgate. Bad area. Metro is close is a fine argument if people were going to weeknight games after work. It's not 1985. Let's move on. That's pretty extreme, but I actually think there's a lot of merit to some of what he's saying. I agree with the Metro point, notably. The vast majority of people going to NFL games are going to be going on Sundays, driving in between 9 and noon. That's not really the time that you have to have the Metro for. Now, if you're going to be drinking, obviously you got to do a rideshare Uber situation where Metro is cheaper. I totally get that. But most people plan accordingly, either have a DD or sit in the parking lot, watch games, listen to the radio long enough, and then you're able to go home or what have you. But football is tailgating.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball, you need to have the Metro. I'm coming in right at game time or in the middle of the first inning. Basketball, hockey, in the city, it makes sense. You got to be at a Metro stop. You're not tailgating. You're not sitting in the parking lot. In those sports, at those venues, 80% of people, and I'm making that number up, but I would imagine it's something like that, are not making a day of it and coming for hours on end and playing cornhole and bags and setting up tables and bringing their chips and their dip and having a fiesta with all their buddies. So I think there is some merit to this when you talk about losing parking lot space, losing tailgating. Metro is actually not nearly as used as it would be for other sports. Do I prefer RFK? I do. But this idea that it's this disaster if they don't end up back in the city or at RFK, I've always kind of thought was a little bit overblown, and maybe it's just my age, my youth, because I went there once, and it was a decade after they'd last won a Super Bowl, or close to it, 6-7 years, right at the end of RFK, after their last title, Danny. But my point is, the gap between a Taj Mahal in Maryland, or Virginia having a stadium.
Hey guys, I'm from Virginia. We've got a stadium.
We don't do stadiums. We do memes. Virginia.
Want to go to the Virginia Stadium later?
Having a stadium in Maryland or Virginia, I don't think the gap's nearly as big.
So he's partially right, partial credit. We do overrate the RFK site. We do overrate it. And here's the reason why we overrate it. Not because of what he said. We overrate it because I think a lot of folks have, all the joy was there. We just assume that once the stadium's erected there, it'll be like it was. It won't be. Nothing will be the same. It's going to look totally different. A stadium whose bleachers bounce is not up to code. We're not doing that anymore. That doesn't exist. That dream doesn't exist. Now, here's where everybody's wrong. It's by so far and away the best location that nothing else matters. There are sacrifices and trade-offs that are going to be made. Some of the people that tailgate and love it so much, you may not be able to tailgate in the same way. That is the trade-off, certainly. I think there are going to be some sacrifices. The convenience, the central location, the idea that Virginia fans, there still are, they exist, by the way, it's part of the DMV, everyone settled down, have had to take it up the you-know-where for so many years and drive all over creation and go to Maryland.
What makes it the best location?
Central, the most centrally located, the fact that all three municipalities have a little bit of work to do to get there, the idea that it's close to things and that it's close to Metro. Everyone's poo-pooing the Metro part of it. I think that's essential. I think the new modern era fan will need to be able to get on the Metro, hop over, get their pregame sandwich from Panera, whatever the hell's on campus, and walk in.
The one thing you're sleeping on is when they build this new stadium in Maryland, potentially, I believe it'll be just as close to Metro as the RFK site will. I mean, possibly. They could be within a half mile. I don't know, you know, by GPS, you know, Google Maps, how far when I get off the Metro is from the front door of the stadium. But it'll definitely be closer to Metro than the current one is. And they get to decide where they put this thing. They could extend Metro if they needed to. There's things that they could do. But I want to get the calls on this next, because actually this is one of those things where the pulse of the people matters a lot, and we need to touch our listeners. 800-636-1067 is the number. We're going to hit the phones hard on this next. This question, it's really a comment from a listener, is that the idea behind RFK, the nostalgia therein, that it's just like this overrated pipe dream, and it really isn't as big a deal that the Commanders end up there than people think. You buying that or selling that? We're Grant and Danny.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.